Good morning. You're tuned to KGNU's Morning Magazine. It's Friday, November 6th. Thanks for joining us here on listener-supported community radio. I'm Roz Brown. Ahead today on this beautiful fall morning in Colorado, we'll spend a few minutes outdoors with a gray solitaire and hear the song it sings to guard its favorite food. That's coming up on Nature's Almanac. Well, we're all still waiting to hear who will be our next president, for sure, so it might be natural that you miss the outcome of a few local ballot issues this week. Boulder voters were adamant on one issue Tuesday night. They want to decide who gets to be the mayor. One of the leaders of that ballot measure will share his thoughts. Then a New Vista High School student will share his views on surviving the pandemic as part of our youth collaboration with Media Gardens. As we all wait on pins and needles for a final decision in the presidential race, a group of diverse clergy, faith leaders, and lay leaders gathered in Denver yesterday to call for unity in aftermath of the election. Then at the bottom of the hour, two regular features, the tip on how to avoid food waste from John Lendorf, followed by Trends Diary. Then it's Connections at 8:30, where our KGNU host will discuss what's happened since Tuesday's election. Also, stay tuned at 9:30 for another morning of eclectic music until noon here at KGNU. But first, we'll start with some regional and local headlines. Beginning today, Boulder County will move to the strictest phase of safer-at-home restrictions due to rising coronavirus numbers, putting the area on the verge of a return to stay-at-home orders. In an email Wednesday, Boulder County public health officials said the county was informed by the Colorado Department of Public Health and Environment that it would be moved to safer-at-home level orange, formerly known as level 3. According to state data, new cases of COVID-19 among Boulder County residents in the past 2 weeks is about 300 per 100,000 people. Now, safer at home level orange begins at 175 cases per 100,000 people, and stay at home begins at 350 cases per 100,000 population. So Boulder County is very close to reverting to a stay at home order, which means please wear your mask. Meanwhile, Colorado unemployment filings increased 25% this week as stricter rules were enacted to slow the spread of COVID-19. Steve Miller has more on the story.
The spike in new unemployment claims comes after Denver and Adams County capped most businesses at 25% capacity. The Denver Post reports that more than 10,700 people filed new unemployment claims in Colorado last week, the highest total since July. The dramatic increase in COVID-19 cases has caused public health officials to put a freeze on public and private gatherings in the metro area. Last week, Denver and Adams County moved into the second highest level of restrictions, color code yellow. That moved capacity from 50% inside most businesses down to 25%. Broomfield County is also moving to tighter restrictions, including the 25% capacity, starting today. Jefferson County will move to that stage on Monday. In Boulder County, public health officials have moved to the stricter level orange restrictions due to a rapid increase in cases. Previously called level 3, the new level orange has capacity restrictions, mostly at the 25% capacity level of places like restaurants, places of worship, offices, retail shops, and gyms, among others. At safer-at-home level orange, remote, hybrid, or limited in-person learning is suggested for K-12 and higher education. In-person learning for preschool through grade 12 schools is now defined as critical business and ensures that local districts can determine how to structure the format of education based on local factors. I'm Steve Miller for KGNU.
And as coronavirus cases surge locally, CU Boulder announced Thursday that it will shift to remote learning for the remainder of the semester starting November 16th. Classes were scheduled to go remote after Thanksgiving, but switching to remote learning earlier gives students a chance to return home before Thanksgiving. The Boulder County Commissioners Thursday voted to table a proposed expansion of the Boulder Rifle Club. The unanimous decision followed a 10-hour virtual public hearing this week where the 150 speakers were split, about half in favor and half opposed. Many who live within a roughly 2-mile radius of the club are against expansion, citing noise and safety concerns, disturbance to animals, and increased traffic. The Boulder County Planning Commission had recommended that the proposal be rejected. The commissioners said they're tabling it because they need to learn more about what needs to be done to mitigate existing and future sound levels. Wolves will be introduced in Colorado in 3 years after a final vote tally put the 2020 ballot measure over the top on Thursday, and opponents conceded defeat yesterday, which means Colorado Parks and Wildlife now must develop a plan and reintroduce an undetermined number of gray wolves by the end of 2023 on former habitat in the state west of the Continental Divide. On that subject, a decision by the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to end federal protections for gray wolves will likely see a challenge. The U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service says the animal's population has rebounded to the point that it no longer needs to have those protections in the lower 48 states. When the move becomes final, those states will have control over management plans. But John Murtaugh with the group Defenders of Wildlife says wolf habitat is very limited right now, making it harder to expand, especially if hunts resume.
When they put this plan together, they had an independent science review board, and four of the five members of that independent review board were very critical of this decision.
Murtaugh says his group and other conservation organizations will challenge the decision in court. Meanwhile, some of the support for the Colorado wolf measure can be attributed to the massive voter turnout on Tuesday. At the state capitol, it will mean that women will make up the majority of lawmakers, and more people of color will serve next year, while the top leadership will remain largely white and male. Raquel Lane Arignello, policy manager for CIRC, the Colorado Immigrants' Rights Coalition, shared post-election results during a press conference yesterday.
We saw historic voter turnout in Colorado, despite the challenges of organizing safely during a global pandemic. As of Wednesday afternoon, results show that Coloradans had returned 303,265 ballots, which puts our state's voter turnout at about 87% of registered voters. And that's the highest rate in years and among the highest of any state in the country, proving that our state is a state of active civic engagement.
And finally, if you now have headspace to think about something other than the election, Community Food Share is hosting their annual food drive this week, asking local residents to make food donations. Normally, the event occurs Friday through Sunday, but this year there's a virtual option that makes it possible for people to make donations online all week. Community Food Share aims to collect 150,000 meals this year. Go to communityfoodshare.org to find out how you can help so many experiencing critical needs this year. Weather along the Front Range, mostly sunny with a high of 71 degrees, about the same on Saturday but cooler with a high of 54, then possibility of snow on Monday and a high of 40 degrees. Low tonight should be around 44, and right now outside our Boulder studios, it's 45 degrees and it's 8:14 here at KGNU.
It's November. What's happening in the natural world? Here are Boulder Naturalists with Carol Cushman and Scott Sievers.
We just heard a Townsend solitaire singing at the base of the hill here, right at the border of Boulder and the foothills. It's singing its territorial song, which is a nice warbled phrase. They sing this territorial song throughout the winter to define their territories, which are usually centered around Rocky Mountain juniper trees.
This is a treat. A lot of times we come searching for something and we never find what we're looking for, or we go for several hours before we find it. We had just barely gotten out of the car when we heard the solitaire sing its one-note song.
Its call note is sort of a... One of my friends calls it Johnny One Note.
And I think it's that Johnny One Note song that really catches your attention and distinguishes it from other birds, because no other bird does anything quite like that.
Here it is, Carol. It's right behind us at the top of this locust.
Oh my goodness. Right out there against the bright blue sky. And it looks almost white from this angle because the lighting, but how beautiful it is. The Townsend solitaire is in the thrush family, so it looks a little bit like a robin, but it has a very upright posture when it perches, so it has a more slender silhouette. It's kind of a soft, pretty gray color with the white eye ring and wing bars.
The warbled song, if you know a house finch's song, it's almost like a house finch that doesn't take a breath because solitaires will just keep singing and singing.
I think one of the reasons I like it is it is one of the very few birds that actually sings its beautiful song during winter. The other one that I really love is the American Dipper, and it will sing in the middle of a frozen creek. And of course, it's courting time for the great horned owls.
And they're defending their territories. Dippers are defending territories along creeks, and solitaires are defending territories around juniper bushes. That's pretty much true of all winter singers. They're defending against birds that might want to come and take their foods.
The name Townsend solitaire is appropriate because in winter, the bird does tend to be solitary, whereas it will pair up in the springtime and you're more likely to see two of them. But it's not a bird that ever flies around in flocks like robins do. In winter, we'll see flocks of sometimes up to 100 robins, but that doesn't happen with the solitaires.
Solitaires not only defend their fruit larders in the winter against other solitaires, they often will chase off robins and waxwings. And sometimes a flock of robins will descend into a juniper bush and start feasting, and the solitaire is just sitting there looking forlorn as it can't keep up with all the robins that are eating all of its berries. So this solitaire has defined its territory around this house that has a lot of juniper trees around it.
One study suggested that they need to eat between 42,000 and 84,000 juniper berries to survive the winter.
Junipers have been getting a bad name recently because of fire and their very flammable trees. But let's not discount their importance for wildlife. So if you plant them responsibly around your yard, you should be able to still provide for solitaires.
Scott Sievers and Ruth Carol Cushman are friends and Boulder naturalists.
Nature's Almanac, produced by Shelley Schlender, is heard every first Friday of the month on The Morning Magazine. Boulder is the largest city in Colorado that doesn't elect its mayor, but that will change in 2023 following overwhelming support Tuesday night for ballot issue 2E. Right now, council members select a mayor among themselves at the first meeting following a municipal election. The issue, originally a citizen petition, didn't qualify for the ballot after a snafu at the city's end over the submission date and needed signatures. Council then worked with the group, Our Mayor, Our Choice, to put it on the ballot and let voters decide. I spoke with Eric Budd, who collected signatures for the ballot petition. Three quarters of voters approved the ballot measure Tuesday night, and Budd says they want to elect the mayor because it provides more accountability and inclusion.
When you look at the numbers, it just made sense. Do you want the right to elect the mayor? And I think people say, well, yes. And why didn't we have that right beforehand? I think that was really clear. I can tell you just from collecting signatures, hundreds and hundreds of signatures over a few months, that was the biggest thing that people came up to us with was, wait, how come we don't elect our mayor already? Or people that were fairly new to Boulder, lived here only a few years, were like, I don't know any city of this size that doesn't elect its mayor. And so there was just a confusion, a bewilderment. But I think when we gave them the option, they're like, yeah, this just makes sense.
By allowing citizens to select the mayor, Bud believes it could help decrease polarization occurring in Boulder.
It came down to Boulder's becoming a little more politically polarized, and Boulder voters are looking for more ways to assert their voice and to be included in the conversation and to make sure that the issues they care about are being heard by our elected officials. And this ballot measure is a step in the right direction in bringing that accountability to the Boulder electorate.
By allowing citizens to select the mayor, Bud believes it could help decrease polarization occurring in Boulder.
I think a great example is looking at other communities that use ranked choice voting. And you'll see in mayoral elections in San Francisco or the Bay Area, Minneapolis, you have actually candidates who will, even though they are related in policy, will say, hey, you know what? I have my base of supporters. They're going to rank me number one. But since I somewhat agree with you, I'm going to actually tell my supporters to rank you number two. And what that does is it actually starts to bridge the gap. And instead of you running against everybody else, you're actually running alongside a number of folks. And so it will limit polarization. And the main reason why it limits polarization is negative campaigning always loses. And you have to build a coalition that is supported by a majority of the voters. And by definition, you can't be polarizing and maintain a support of the majority of the community. And so I think those are the fundamentals of what ranked choice voting brings. And in our community that has over the last few years, I would say certainly over the last 7 or 8, the polarization has become more and more rampant. There's more and more sort of party line votes on council. The rhetoric on council elections, having now been a part of the last couple cycles, has amplified with hyperbole and fear and those sorts of tactics. And it's a dangerous recipe, I would argue, because we're nonpartisan. We're not Republican or Democrat in our community, but we've sort of created these de facto two parties. And unless we hope that these groups just decide to play nice and focus on collaborative solutions, we have to actually change the system and force these groups and other groups to come to the middle. And that's what ranked choice voting does, is it changes the game. And in many ways, that's really all we have left, is changing the game, because these groups have sort of pushed our community into sort of two different directions. And I think the middle ground is always the best choice. And that's what ranked choice voting will bring us, is a limit of polarization and a little bit more of a compromise of the middle. And I don't know too many people that would argue that that's a bad thing.
Butt says the goal is to introduce Boulder voters to ranked choice voting for mayor in 2023.
And the nice thing is that gives us a few years. The biggest thing that needs to start happening is voter education. And our campaign team will be doing this work along with the folks in the city and the county. This is where we start to educate the voters in Boulder about what does it mean to elect your mayor? How will that change things? But more importantly, this new voting system called ranked choice voting, how does it work? What do you need to see? What does a ballot look like? How are votes counted? And so the nice thing is we give ourselves a nice long runway of 3 years to begin that voter education and make sure Boulder voters are very comfortable with this new election system. And so that, I think, is the biggest thing that we have in front of us to do, is to just make sure everyone is comfortable with how to vote your preference.
Again, that was Eric Budd, who collected signatures for the Our Mayor, Our Choice ballot measure, approved overwhelmingly by voters on Tuesday. He will be pushing for phase two of election reform in Boulder, which includes fair pay for council, and eventually hopes to pass phase three, which would include electing council members through proportional representation rather than at large, the system we use now. You're listening to The Morning Magazine on KGNU. We've all been told that young people are not as susceptible to COVID-19 as older adults, but that doesn't mean the pandemic isn't hard on high school students. John Ironside with New Vista High School shares his experience. No bad without the good.
I used to love school. Before the COVID pandemic hit and schools moved to all virtual, I feel like I could actually get stuff done. Before, I could remember to actually turn in my work and I could focus. I don't feel like that anymore. Now, just remembering to turn something in is a problem for me. I feel more stressed out about schoolwork and somehow feel like I'm constantly forgetting something. Sometimes it feels like nothing's going my way. I used to feel like I was alone on this journey, but a few weeks ago, while I was playing a game on my computer, I ran into a quote that made me stop and think for a while. A character said, "There's no bad without the good, and no good without the bad." Sounds like you tasted a bunch of the former, but that only means you're overdue for a whole lot of the latter. I felt as though this related to my life and what's happening this year. I feel we should all take this into our hearts with the given circumstances. It may seem bad right now, but soon everything will get better. This gave me motivation to try and work harder. If I can get through this, everything will become better.
And as we all wait on pins and needles for a final decision in the presidential race, maybe this morning, some folks are already calling it, a group of diverse clergy, faith leaders, and lay leaders gathered in Denver yesterday to call for unity in the aftermath of the election.
As people of hope, we come here today to remember what we already know.
All right.
This moment is big.
Yeah.
but not bigger than our dreams. This moment is hard, but we are strong. This moment is foggy with uncertainty, but it has given us clarity.
Reverend Nicole LaMarche of Boulder was among the clergy and leaders who delivered a call to action in the aftermath of the election. Representing Jewish, Catholic, Protestant, and Unitarian Universalist faith traditions, more than 80 people gathered to acknowledge that the election's outcome revealed a deep political divide. Sharon Battle of Denver opened the event, calling on Coloradans to love their neighbor.
My question to you people of faith, people of Colorado, who is your neighbor? Am I your neighbor?
All right.
The answer is yes. The
battle was followed by Rabbi Rachel Coburn of Denver, who reminded those attending that the Torah says, justice, justice shall you pursue.
It's not telling us pursue justice when it's super convenient for you. Right. Pursue justice when it's easy.
Yeah.
No, it's saying run into the fire.
Yeah.
Pursue justice when it is hard.
Yeah.
Pursue justice when you are challenged.
Yeah.
Pursue justice when it is most needed. Tzedek, tzedek, tirdof, we will pursue justice and we will keep singing.
Together, Colorado Board President Lee McNeil urged those attending to respond, even as the nation remains in unrest.
Our voices, our work does not stop here.
That's right. Yeah. Yeah.
We shall not be moved from our stance of speaking up and speaking out.
Yeah.
We shall not be moved.
Yeah. Yeah.
Love and justice are bigger than just this moment.
Thanks to Kathy Partridge for contributing to our report. Time now for a tip from John Lindorf on how to avoid food waste, especially during these lockdown days.
Hi, it's John Lindorf from KGNU's Radio Nibbles, here with another practical way to cut food waste, save flavor, and save some money. For instance, our landfills are full of still edible fruit we toss away. Instead, try these ideas. If you have too much fresh fruit, don't wait until it turns. Cut it in chunks, freeze it, and bag it. Leftover fruit juice of any kind can be frozen in cubes. You can use them in slushies, smoothies, cocktails. You can peel and simmer unsightly apples and pears and that kind of thing into a smooth sauce. Or hey, make a pie. Before you squeeze lemons, limes, oranges, and other citrus fruits, use a zester or grater to remove the colored zest, not the white pith, from the outside. The zest can be added to desserts and marinades and sauces or to make lemon chicken. Citrus zest, of course, also makes wonderful syrups and marmalades. Whatever you do, don't toss overripe fruit. Just puree it and freeze it for smoothies and baking. If you find a deal on ripe bananas, slice and freeze them on a tray and bag. To freeze for a hot cereal or baking. Fleshy pits from peaches and mangoes, along with pineapple cores and strawberry tops, can be simmered with sugar or honey to make syrup or jelly. In any case, remember that composting, that's the last resort. And you can find more food waste tips and suggestions at news.kgnu.org.
John Lindorf's food tips every Friday here at KGNU. Coming up next, Connections. Joel Edelstein is in and his group of hosts from Connections. They are all going to talk about the election, what's happened since Tuesday night, what's happening this morning. So stay tuned for that. They're going to be discussing all the ins and outs of what we've seen this week. The weather today, look for a high of 71 and a low tonight of 54. Right now, let's take a listen to this week's Trends Diary.
Time now for Trends Diary, where Boulder County residents of all ages share personal experiences that relate to a pressing community need. The focus for now is on our shared need to connect and solve problems, despite the increased isolation we're all experiencing during the COVID-19 pandemic. This project is brought to you in partnership with Community Foundation Boulder County.
Dear Trends Diary, my name is Jessica Helson, and I am working with Pandemic of Love here in Boulder, Colorado. A woman named Shelley Togelski in Florida started this at her kitchen table on March 13th, right when the pandemic hit. And the idea was a super grassroots way of matching someone in need due to the COVID crisis with a patron in their community who might be willing to help provide a little bit of support. The idea was one-on-one connections, not necessarily meant to cover major expenses like your rent or mortgage or necessarily make up for your payroll, but to help with essential household items like a prescription, diapers, grocery, a bill that's late, and one that's not going to be forgiven. At a time when we're socially distanced, I love that it really allowed for a true one-on-one connection. It gives you a chance to really support another human being and to know where your support is going in real time. Her idea started to take off. She put out a call for people to launch local micro communities, as she calls them. I always considered myself a helper and a connector, so it spoke to me. I was feeling helpless and shut off, and it made me feel like I could really make even small differences for people having a really tough time. Most of the folks who submit forms mention that they haven't been in this position before. A woman wrote once, "Just trying to get back on my feet until I can get some stable income again. Then I hope to be able to come back to a program like yours and help someone else out, pay it forward." We hear things like that a lot. I tried to cast a pretty wide net when I told Shelley what area I could manage. I listed all the zip codes in and around Boulder. If any zip code is submitted on our national forms that she receives that matches with our micro community, it'll automatically come to us. But we thought it would be good if we had our own website too. So we launched pandemicofloveboulder.com, and you can find both the Get Help and Give Help forms there. And they only take about 2 minutes to fill out. Since mid-March, we've made over 200 matches. The average match is $135. It's been heartwarming. There have been a couple of people who prefer to give anonymously, but most people enjoy having the interaction and human connection we're also lacking now.
Feeling inspired? Do you have your own story of making connections or solving problems during this time of physical isolation? Then visit www.commfound.org. Look for Trends Diary and share your experience with Community Foundation Boulder County. Your submission could wind up on these KGNU airwaves.